Well, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Vince Wilson as we talk about the paranormal, his book, Ultimate Ghost Tech, and we'll be back in a moment with you and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Vince Wilson with us, George here, George Norrie, of course, and Vince, since you've been doing this, which has been how many years now?
Oh, since 1998.
And have you learned a lot since then? If you look back to 1998 when you first started and you where you are today.
Leaps and bounds. Everything up to 1998, when I started really looking into it, reading books on the paranormal, on psychic phenomenon, and interacting with people that had much more experience than I did. It definitely changes you, especially when you start going on real investigations and experiencing phenomenon, seeing it firsthand and talking to the people that have also had experiences. So yes, I've certainly learned a lot. I became more learned, more researched. I studied every resource I could find on these topics. And also on the skeptical point of view, and even I have a knowledge of magic and illusion that helps me see through fraud and fakery when the cases in which that's been encountered. So that's also given me an advantage. So yes, I have learned a lot in all those years.
What are the fraudsters out for? Money?
Well, sometimes they're out for attention. Sometimes they want to get a ghost hunting TV show. I've had that happen where someone was faking things. I had a case once where the children were faking it because the parents were going through some marital issues and they felt neglected and ignored. So they faked a haunting
for attention
to get attention from their parents. Yeah. So sometimes they're just get attention seekers, and sometimes their goal is to with the advent of the ghost hunting shows, their goal is to get on TV. They want to be a celebrity.
Well, and those shows need an upbeat ending, don't they?
That is correct.
Can't do show after show after show and not have a ghost show up.
That's right. That is definitely a flaw. And I've been on a couple of those shows, most recently on the Holzer Files in 2019. But I tend to stick with talking head spots. I don't mind going on there like to talk about this or that or my expertise in a particular topic, but I try to avoid getting on a regular show for reasons like that. But the people who are on those shows, they will generally tell you, hey, this is not how I investigate in real life. This is what I do for the TV show because it has to be entertaining to some degree.
Sure.
So they add a little bit of drama and things like that. Some behind the scenes secrets for those who don't know how Hollywood works. But yeah, those reality and there's probably legitimate things that happen on those shows for sure. But it is some of it is exaggerated for the purpose of getting viewers to keep watching. So these people still have jobs.
Do you go to various sites still to investigate?
Yes, mostly. And I'm currently writing another book on haunted and mysterious places in the Mid-Atlantic and Eastern Shore. So I've been retreading some old stomping grounds in this area. Going to up until the pandemic, I was investigating a lot at the Lord Baltimore Hotel, one of the top 10 most haunted hotels in the United States. I've been to Edgar Allan Poe's gravesite a lot. There's a lot of phenomena reported there over the years. The Poe's ghost itself is said to haunt that location. And contrary to popular belief, he seems very happy to be a ghost, according to some eyewitness accounts. There's also a gray lady who floats through the graveyard, but the most commonly reported phenomenon at the gravesite is an ominous feeling near the gravesite of an admiral who passed away 200 years ago and is buried in the catacombs beneath the Westminster Church. And the Poe House also has a reputation for being haunted in Baltimore, and among other places in that area.
Have you ever been scared on one of these missions, Vince?
Well, the Waverly Hills story, I was definitely scared for sure. I was, everyone there was. Even at the Poe gravesite, one time I had just completed a investigation and a tour of the location, and it was maybe around midnight, and I had not gotten nearly enough sleep that day, and I sat down rest my head for a second on one of the pews. They have these benches down there for watching a documentary on the burying grounds. And I sat down there and I nodded off for a second. What I thought was a second, but it turned out to be 2 hours. I was in the catacombs, locked inside at 2 o'clock in the morning by myself. If I had left at that moment, I would have just been right behind everyone else. And I didn't. And I was scared in there by myself. There was definitely a feeling of a presence in that location. That was very scary. I've certainly had enough jump scares over the years of weird sounds, experiences, and feelings. The Gettysburg is another popular location. I had investigated quite a bit the orphanage there.
That's not scary. It's bizarre, but it's not scary, is it?
No. Most of the fear comes from fear of the innate fear of the unknown, more than anything else. I think it's a protective response built into our neurology, basically. We're designed to, accept a certain degree of normalcy. We're raised that this is how the world works. And when you have experiences, regardless of whether they're actually dangerous, it could be scary because it's outside these established norms.
Let's take some calls here for you. We'll pick it up by going to Jonathan in Houston, Texas, to get us started. Hello, John. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. Thank you.
Good. Nice to talk to you. Big fan.
Thanks.
So, my story, I guess, was when I was a kid, and my mom was tucking me into bed, and we looked out in the hallway, and we saw a little blue orb just floating across the hallway, and I noticed it, and then my mom noticed it. It was just the weirdest thing.
What would you say, Vince, orbs are?
Well, the most famous orb case was researched by my good friend Dr. Barry Taff in the 1970s. It was the Doris Beither case, and otherwise known as the Entity case.
Is this the same Barry Taff, by the way, who investigated the Shroud of Turin, or is that a different one?
I think that's a different one.
Okay.
I don't think Barry ever investigated. He might have investigated from a scholarly point of view, but I don't think he's ever handled the Shroud of Turin. That case is the case of the that was the basis of the Barbara Hershey movie called The Entity.
Yeah.
So in that case, there was actually manifested balls of light. It gave off a luminous green glow to it, and it zoomed around. There's photographs, things that you can watch them online. You can see these pictures of these balls of light zipping and zapping around the room at high velocity, leaving contrails behind them and arcs in the space. And these are visible. So the theories behind this is that it's a manifestation of some type of psychic energy, a side effect of paranormal phenomena. I know there's a lot of theories out there that these are ghosts, but the parapsychologists, for the most part, believe, and this is subject to your own beliefs, is that orbs and these manifestations are in fact a side effect of its intense psychic paranormal energy. They're not the ghosts themselves, but a spark that's given off a weld, for using an analogy. They exist. So it's establishing that there might be something serious going on, and there's a high energy presence in that location, but most parapsychologists do not believe that they're, in fact, they themselves spirits.
Next up, let's go to Dora in Jersey City, New Jersey. Hello, Dora. Welcome.
Hello, George and Ben. Can you hear me well?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm going to start right now. George, remember I told you I live in Tony Curry's mansion?
Yeah.
Okay. At night time, Tony Curry's at 8, he will go to the factory. It was a disco. And right away, the German May, we left the house. She was mad because he gave me a job. He met me hours Christina left to start the divorce. I seen the same day. So the May planned to marry him, but he didn't know nothing, and Christina didn't know nothing. So in night time, I was alone in the house, in the mansion, 42-room Carrollwood mansion, in Carrollwood Drive by Bel Air. At 11 o'clock, I was trying to sleep, and you hear by the hall, and near me is the hall and the kitchen. And you hear a person dragging a chain, a big chain, going to the kitchen and put it on the stainless steel counter and like cutting. So I was thinking the May maybe put, you know, the big recording at that time, you can make a little noise. It was different to the one now.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a little noise. So I was thinking maybe she come back and she put a recording, you know, to scare me. So the only way I have to get out and go to the kitchen, if it's a ghost, I will know in my left hand if it's paranormal. But if it's recording, it will be around. So one night I say, no, I'm going to get out. I go to the kitchen now. So I went to the kitchen and I put my arm around. It was paranormal.
It was a ghost.
No recording or nothing. So the one I was there and I didn't know who didn't it was. I find out later. And I have to condense. I'm going to end now. The ghost told me my boss called him by a Ouija board. So I tried to find the Ouija board in 42 room. I couldn't find it. Later, I found the Ouija board, but it was not in the mansion. Thank you very much, everybody. I hope you enjoy my memory of Tony Curry's mansion.
Interesting take there, Vince.
Yes, it is.
And Tony Curtis played the part of Harry Houdini in the movie. How ironic.
That is correct. Yeah, that is amazing. It didn't occur to me that he was the original shortly after. Yeah, what was that movie from the 1940s, I think it was?
No, not that. I don't think it was that early. I can find out.
Maybe 50s then.
Something.
It had to have been the 50s. I have to look that up. But yeah, Tony Curtis played a very fictionalized version of Harry Houdini, in that movie. To be honest with you, Houdini was a bit of a jerk in real life. he would not have been your friend if you went back in time to hang out with him. 1953, I just looked it up.
53, yeah, something like that. God, that was a long time ago. Tom in Baltimore, take it away, Thomas. Go ahead.
Tough call to follow, Mr. Lurie. I'm going to be having nightmares about chains dragging around the house.
We are. That's right. Me too.
Listen, real quick, I did have a comment and a question for the two of you.
Okay.
I want to thank Cornelius for his compliment about my call on Sunday. We both got through, and I thank God that he's still with us. I always appreciate his insightful and thoughtful comments.
Thank you. Well said.
Now, but here's a comment that I had. I called last hour, and actually we ran out of time, but it's pertinent and germane to any paranormal topic. As a retired police detective, and most cops come to know this, as far as witness testimony and evidence in court, it's a scary thought in and of itself, but it's very true. Eyewitness testimony is the most relied upon evidence. in a court of law to convict people, from minor crimes to capital crimes. However, on the flip side, it's also the least reliable evidence. Now, relative to what we're talking about, be it unidentified flying objects or other paranormal things, I'm wondering what Mr. Wilson and you would have to say relative to your thoughts on how different people perceive different things. And I'll take the answer off the air, but I'll leave you with a quick story that I experienced down in Nevada. Was out in the desert just checking things out, wanted to see if I could see anything weird flying around, and I was outside of Creech Air Force Base, and didn't see anything weird at night, but the next day I did see a number of things flying through the air, and I was very disappointed because they were simple hang gliders, you know, the kind that looked like a little homemade airplane with a guy and a lawnmower engine. It wasn't until about 4 years later, because it was nothing but hang gliders, that I just happened to be looking at the tape, and I realized, and this was in the late, mid to late 90s, that what I had actually witnessed was drones, and they hadn't been released to the public.
They were released or discovered at that time, were they?
No. What year was this again?
In the 90s.
This was in... right before they became public knowledge. And, you know, here I am, thought I was, at least I had been trained as someone who was able to identify things precisely. I was shocked at how wrong I was. And I wonder how, when people don't realize or haven't seen something before, like the guest you had on probably about 10 years ago from the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, he said, when the Indians first saw the Spanish galleons come in, that they couldn't see them. They saw the waves, but because they'd never seen such a thing, they just had no way really to conceptualize it. I wonder how much of that goes on with UFOs and ghosts. And I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks for your service, George, and happy belated birthday.
All right. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. Well, I would guess, Vince, a lot of people, if they can't pinpoint something because of what they know, they have no idea what they're looking at, do they?
No, they don't. And the thing is, like, as he established, eyewitness reports can be terribly unreliable.
Absolutely.
Memory, people think of memory like a computer, where it's like bits of data or like blocks that are stacked on top of each other or file cabinets. You always think of these allegories and analogies for what memory is. But truth be told, memory is like sand. Like colored sand that's been shaken up in a jar. It changes, you know, your even your own memories, which you think are clear and definitive, have been altered over the years because our brains are flawed. You know, unfortunately, that's how the human mind works. Investigations are different, though, than a crime, because when a crime happens, you have to go backwards. You know, the crime happens. Hopefully a video camera caught it, but usually not. So you have eyewitnesses that tell you what happens. But an investigation, you go in there with equipment. You go in there with cameras and video recorders and smartphones, hopefully, you know, among other devices.
And that gets the job done. Vince, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about toxicity and what is happening to all of us. And then later on in the program, do you really need spine surgery? Think about that on Coast to Coast. And welcome back, George Norrie, along with Vince Wilson, as we talk about the paranormal. Vince, as a hypnotist, how long does it take to put somebody under?
It depends on the individual. Some people respond to different stimulus than others. The most common type of hypnosis, of course, is relaxation therapy. The things you've heard about before in popular culture, which is, you know, you're feeling very relaxed. When I count backwards from 10, you use a very relaxed, syncopated voice style, and you just get them to focus on an object and relax. So that could take up to anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes to induce hypnosis. Some people respond to heightened stimulus because they have active minds that can't calm down. They're always distracted. So you use a confusion induction. For, you know, you might count backwards from 10 and then interrupt yourself and start over, basically forcing them to pay attention to you so they go into the relaxed state. It sounds counterintuitive because you're stimulating the mind, but it keeps them focused on your voice to help them calm down and reach the state of mind known as the theta state, the cycles of seconds of brainwave activity in which we're most in tune with the subconscious aspect of us. Some people believe that the theta state is also where psychic activity occurs in humans.
Do you think that cemeteries are indeed haunted or not?
I think some can be haunted. I think that there's, unfortunately, in the earlier days, you know, people were buried alive, and there's also, that could explain some sorts of.
Or during the plague, haunting. During the plague, these people, they thought they were dead and they buried them. You're right.
Oh, yeah. Even recently, this has happened in the past couple of hundred years, as a matter of fact. But yes, you're right. People were buried alive and they died in those graves. It's horrific. Some of your listeners are going to have nightmares thinking about that. But yeah, it's a terrible thing. People were buried alive and died in their graves. So that could explain why they haunt those locations. And also, different belief systems, different cultures have ideas on, how people pass on. You know, in West African cultures, some of them anyway, there was a belief in the big and little spirit. The larger spirit, the big spirit would go to the afterlife. The little spirit would stick around and protect your loved ones and your body until it was properly taken care of. And the word associated with that is zombie, with a slightly different spelling, of course. And that eventually passed on into Americanized hoodoo and voodoo traditions. So in those cases, and there's even some Greek myths that could explain why ghosts haunt graveyards or burial grounds, improper burials, or unhappiness in life could also explain that sort of thing.
Interesting take. Let's go take some calls. Let's go to whose turn is it? It is Rob in Tustin, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Robbie. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you guys?
Okay, Rob.
Vince, George. I'm not going to do the whole dance, but George, I've been listening to Coast since the 90s. My mom raised me on it, and I heard the change from Art Bell and everything. And this is the first time talking to you, and I just want to say, man, this is wonderful. And Vince,
thank you.
You present yourself really well, and you're intelligent. I love to listen to you. So,
With that,
I'd just like to make a quick comment before I got into my story. Tech tip, everybody, your cell phones, all the voicemails that you have, those are not stored on your phone, okay? So when somebody leaves you a message, it's stored over with your provider, your Verizon, whatever. So when you change your number or lose your phone, you lose all of those voicemails. So what you want to do is if you have a voicemail you want to keep from, say, a loved one or somebody, record it. Just play it back and record it on another phone or something like that.
Good point.
Because, one time you might need it. And I just, unfortunately, I just learned that myself because I was telling Tom, my wife died a few days ago.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
And, thanks. When this happens, you start scrambling and looking for everything and stuff like that. So, anyway, day after, we have this tradition we do. We call it a loop where we walk from the house to the coffee shop to the grocery store and home, and it is a circle. So, anyhow, I went ahead and did that, and I was talking to her saying, hey, give me some kind of sign. Let me know you're okay, all of that stuff, right? And we used to go down and stay at a resort called the Monarch, and she would always talk about butterflies, et cetera. Anyhow, I'm walking. And two monarch butterflies land right in front of me on the ground, and there's two of them. And it looks like they're hugging or doing something inappropriate or something like that, but I was stunned. So I took out my phone, and I recorded it, and then, I started talking to them, and they flew off. Anyhow, So I continued to the coffee shop we always go to, right? I've been going there solid for years. Anyway, I walk in, and there's this girl I've seen maybe once the whole time there. She asked me, she says, "Hey, so how is your wife Stacy doing?" Jeez. And I just kind of froze. I was thinking, should I say what happened? Or anyhow, I just, you know, worked it off. But that freaked me out big time. And Vince and George, I just wanted to ask you, ever since I've just been talking to her, I was wondering if you guys had any comments on that or other ways to communicate, because, you know, I'd like to stay in touch.
All right, I'll let you start with it, Vince. Give it your best shot.
Well, the, you know, the personal seance is a possible thing. I always recommend having other people with you, of course, to protect yourself, because you have someone who can be there to have your back in case, you know, there is a interruption of some sort. You know, these things are always unpredictable. You know, you never know if something or nothing or something outside your desire could happen. So it's good to have someone with you. In this case, I suggest an extremely trustworthy good friend or relative. You know, a basic pendulum seance is a simple, easy way to communicate with someone who has passed on. A pendulum board, which is a circle with a yes or no on it. You can ask very simple yes or no questions. You can print more elaborate ones from the internet that have letters and numbers on it. But yes or no questions are easy and more accurate when it comes to reading. So if for a first attempt at something like this, I would suggest something along those lines. It could be, at the very least, it could be very rewarding for you.
And I think if there's that love bond that Rob obviously had with his wife, Stacy, that there's some connection there. And I think that filters over, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And once
I would say so.
Yeah. And it makes it even easier, I think, to communicate. John in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, John, take it away.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Hey, I was confirming what that lady told you about the house. And I don't know if I can give the address of it, but I know it very well. My brother was an estate manager at the home from 1983 until 2003 for a wealthy Arab. And that house is many ghosts and real haunted. It's got quite the history.
The Tony Curtis house, you mean?
Yeah, the Tony Curtis house. Joseph Schenck owned that house, who was co-founder of 20th Century Fox, and he used to let Marilyn Monroe stay at a guest house below the mansion. And I guess he was having an affair with her while his wife was up in the main mansion. And Sonny and Cher owned that house when they were doing their TV series. And supposedly they were doing all kinds of crazy stuff around each other's backs in there. But and then I heard Elvis rented it, as well as Tony Curtis had it for a bit. And that whole cul-de-sac there, they have the Jane Mansfield house. I can't give you the address, I guess, but it's owned by the Ameriquest founder now, his wife, because he passed away. And then the other side of it's got Shirley Temple and Esther Williams. All four of those houses are haunted.
What a neighborhood,
yeah.
Huh?
It's like, well, they all have, like, all kinds of intriguing stuff. There's been books and articles wrote about them and all that. I don't know if I can give you the address.
No need. No need.
Yeah, but they're pretty famous. And everything that lady told you is absolutely true. I've heard it because, you know, I used to house sit that home for my brother all the time.
That was when Dora was calling, Vince. Strange, huh?
Yeah, that is strange.
Next up, let's go to Miguel in Pasadena. Welcome to the program. Hi, Miguel. Thanks for calling.
Hey, man. I just want to just let you know that I'm 33 and pretty young, and my brother, who's long past, actually introduced me to your show.
Well, great.
I was probably like 5 or 6. I didn't really understand, and probably Art Bell was probably announcing, and I've just been a long time follower, really.
Well, thank you.
Really, just went through transitions and everything. And I logged on earlier today, or later today, actually, and I just felt like I had this weird sensation happened earlier today, and I didn't really get a chance to fall into the show and really be able to contribute, but walked into my house today through the front door and walked through, and I found some things that were a little bit off, and then I just felt this connection where there's something physically or astronomically not quite right. I probably felt like there was somebody in my house, and there was nobody in my house. I checked and everything, and there's nobody here nor there. And so I walked through my front door, went around the corner, went to my garage where I normally just hang out and listen to music and listen to you guys, you know, when I get a chance.
Yeah.
And I decided to talk to my cousin, and we're FaceTiming, you know, on the phone. And I want to walk back in, and this isn't the first time or probably the 30th time I'm locked into my house.
You're locked out?
Yep.
How could that happen, right?
Yep. Yeah. It's a one-way door. It's been my jester.
Well, let me ask you this, Vince. Are ghosts that may be at his house, are they mischief makers?
Well, there's the very popular, you know, parapsychology book called The Trickster and the Paranormal that suggests that there's, you know, entities and, you know, that could exist that have a sort of mischievous attitude. And also keep in mind that if consciousness survives, and it's an aspect of what someone once was, all right? So if they had a nature like that in life, why wouldn't they be like that when they die? You know, if they had the same memories, when they had the same personality. So if you had a mischievous person who once lived in that location or in that area, and they liked to play practical jokes or fool with people, mess with them, you know, they probably are doing that still, even in their afterlife.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. Let's go next to John in Fremont, Ohio. Hello, John. Take it away.
Hey, George. Vince.
Hi there.
George, again, you guys always have a really good show. Miguel. Hey.
What a story, huh?
Yeah. Ooh. Just keep on asking questions. Maybe we can find answers, right?
Exactly.
That's awesome. All right. So I got a question for Vince.
Go for it.
When you go to sleep at night and you had lost somebody and they come and visit you when you're dreaming, how do you perceive that?
How do you perceive that, Vince?
Oh, yeah. Dream interpretation is complicated. You know, memories and feelings can, remember earlier I said that even memories are unreliable, but dreams can be more so because you have a mixture of reality, memories, and possible interference from, the deceased loved one, for example, in a paranormal situation. So it's subject to interpretation. The a dream interpreter would be someone who could help you very much with that under a interview process. But yes, it's difficult to sieve through that and find the truth of the situation. But there's lots of literature on deceased loved ones interfering or accessing us through our dreams. There's lots of historical precedent for that is a thing that happens. I would recommend doing some research and lucid dreaming to see if you could have more control over the situation while you're dreaming.
Absolutely. We just had a show on that a couple weeks ago, and it's a very powerful way to convince people to do certain things. Vince, we are out of time. I want you to give out one of your favorite websites. Go ahead.
GhostTech.com for your listeners. You can go there, right? I have a past life regression session I'm doing this Saturday. sign up for that. It's a Zoom past life regression. Yes, it does work on Saturday. And so, and you can also find my book there and more information about what I do.
GhostTech.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.